evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT. And this is the Jammer Attractive Net. No, actually, this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. It's sponsored by the Bergen Amateur Radio Association and impeded by an occasional bonehead. In any case, we will proceed tonight. The purpose of the net is to engage in technical dialogue on any subject related to amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computers, and the like. And anything that's actually related to those subjects and or uses those. So, you know, you can talk about a lot of different things given that latitude. So, with that little bit of knowledge in your back pocket, why don't we proceed with how we check in. Alrighty, number one, we check in with our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether or not we have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. So, the idea behind this is that we would like to actually know if you're out there, even if you don't have a question or a comment for the net. And the reason why we want to know if you're out there is because, frankly, it helps us determine who the audience is and how to, shall we say, tailor the input, if you will, from various contributors. We have a pretty exciting net tonight, I'm sure, and it always seems to be, no matter what we do. So we look forward to your participation. All right, this repeater, by the way, is owned by the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club, and we encourage support of that club as well. And we thank them for the use of their repeater. The other baronets are 28375 on Monday nights at 9 o'clock. And Jim Joyce, I believe, runs that show, K2ZO. And then also we have a YL net at 8 o'clock. And I'm not sure who the net control is these days, but it's on 14679 on Monday nights. And the YL net, the Barra Babes, their net is on 14679, and that's the repeater of the Bergen County FM Association, and we also encourage people to support that group as well. Then on Wednesday night, we have the Barra Chat net at 9 o'clock, again on 14679, the Bergen County FM Association repeater. And then at 8:30 on Thursday, we have a 444-100, I think it is, 444-100 net. And that net precedes this at 8:30, and then we are here on Chestnut Ridge at 9 o'clock. So, again, with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question, comment, or both, let's start with the kilo calls. We haven't done that in a while. The kilo calls. Any kilo, please call. K2BAR.
K2BAR is KF2ID. No comments or questions tonight. KF2ID then.
Good evening, Ben. Ben is the net control of our 440 net on Thursday night, 7:30. Alrighty, very good. And any other kilo calls?
K2AMI, Tony. At this time I have no questions and no comments, but we'll be listening. Over.
Okay, Tony, very good. I heard your echo link attempt there. I'm kind of curious about that. We're going to ask you about that in a minute once we get everybody underway. But good hearing you. Who doubled with Tony?
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB, Richard.
Hey, Richard. Good to hear you as well. You have a question or comment for the net?
Well, one question. Probably Tony or you can answer it. Short one for later on.
Question noted, Rich. Thank you very much. Any other kilos?
K2DSL, David. No questions or comments right now.
Okay, David, good evening. I got something for you, which I think you're going to kick out of. And any other kilos? Alrighty, how about whiskeys? This
is W2JEK. Don, no questions or comments.
Good evening to you, sir. And I think the NAQP was last weekend, the NAQP phone, so I'm kind of curious about that. I think that was the last weekend. I think that was. CW was the week before, right? I think I got that right. So let's hear about that. It was some contest. What was it? Yeah, it was the NAQP. Anyway, so what else? Any other whiskeys? All right, any Novembers?
November 2, Oscar Echo Lima. Noel, no question.
Just thinking of you, I have a question for you. How's Elizabeth?
She's in her strength. She had chemo a week ago Monday, so she's finally looking a little bit chipper and walking around. It's going to be rough for a while. She has to go for two more chemos, and then they're going to decide if they can operate, if she's strong enough.
I understand. Okay. Well, very good. She's in our prayers, and you are too, by the way. Very good. All right. Any other Novembers? Any Alpha calls? All righty. Well, any other call signs, late chickens, etc., please call with your call sign, your name. Whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above, please call K2BAR. K2BAR.
This is Nikola with one announcement for the net.
NZ2K with an announcement. Very good. Good to hear you. Mr. Paul? Wow, you've actually made quite a transition to 2 meters lately. Or in addition to your 220 exploits. Very good. Anybody else? All right. Well, let's do this. We have a couple of topics here. One is the NAQP is on the deck. Richard's got a question ahead of that. And I'm going to go with your comment or announcement, Paul, first. So, NZ2K, take it away. Then we'll go to the question. This is K2BAR.
Hang on. I think I might have a battery. Why don't you pass it along, and I'll be right back to get the battery cord.
You're pretty spotty. Okay, yeah, no problem. We can do that. All right, anybody else want to check in real quick? Okey-doke. Well, then let's do the next best thing to being there. KC2PYB, W2, Department K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB. This weekend is supposedly the AARL QSO party or whatever. That's on 6 meters and 2 meters simplex. Is that upper sideband for both 6 meter and 2 meter?
You know, I didn't mention that. I should have. Thank you. Thank you very much. In fact, I'm a little shocked to not hear something from Tony about that, but maybe he's got a different plan. So, let's see. So, the VHF sweepstakes, which is the January VHF contest, is, yes, if you're using single sideband, it would be upper sideband on any and all bands 6 meters and up. You also would have access to FM on any normal simplex frequency except for 146.52. And I'll leave it to Tony to see if we're going to have a club frequency and time for that, for FM. You can even use AM, by the way. You just can't camp out on a repeater input and output, and you can't use 146.52. You can use the national simplex frequencies on 220, on 440, and 6 meters. In fact, let me just give you those. 52.525 FM. Not that you're going to hear a lot there, but you might hear something. 223.5 on 220. and then of course the ever popular 446.0 on 440. Those are all fair game for use during the contest. Contest period starts at 2 p.m. on Saturday and goes to 11 p.m. on Sunday. And I think that's all I need to say at this point about that there thing. So let me toss it over to... Oh, yeah, there is one more thing. The exchange. Your grid square. You can give a signal report if you'd like, but basically you need your call sign and your grid square. Get a roger for that, and away you go. That's pretty much how it works. K2AMI, your comments, sir. K2BAR.
Hey, I'm K2AMI. I think I'm getting through. I'm using the RF link to the repeater, not the computer link. Well, I've been a little under the weather for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and I'm not quite back to full operation. So I'm not sure how much effort I'll be devoting on Saturday, but we will have some time between 2 and 6 on Saturday, and between noon and supper time on Sunday. And we probably will be using 146.580 as a FM frequency to contact us on. That's simplex, no tone, 146.580 on the FM band. We will be operating on multiple frequencies on 6 meters and on 2 meters, and we will be operating on 220 and 432. Look around. You may find us there, but I don't think there'll be a very big effort from the K2BAR group this weekend. There will be some, but not 100% like we usually do it. And the fearless leader here is recovering from the winter, I guess I'd have to say. Pack the net.
Mighty. Well, that makes sense. So the club frequency, if you just want to make a ad hoc contact, is 146.58 simplex. That's a good thing to note. I've got a lot of running around to do on Saturday myself. Saturday morning, I'm going to be at the Fairlawn Club helping them with their tower issue, with their HF beam, of all things. So I'll be hanging off the side of a piece of row 25. Anyway, so let's see what else. So I think that's it. If someone has a question as to what grid square they're in, look yourself up in QRZ. It tells you your grid square based on your address. It's pretty cool. So you can do that as well. If you don't know your grid square, it can be easily resolved. And anybody else have any questions about the VHF contest? Well, nothing has been heard. All right. Mr. Rich, back to you for any final comments on the subject.
Okay, now that kind of answers it. So 6 meters is upper sideband, 2 meters is on FM. I do appreciate it.
Now let me list the calling frequencies and some advice about how to operate each band. 6 meters, 50.125 is the national calling frequency for single sideband. Do not go below that, really, unless you're working far in DX, really. If you want to spread out and get away from the calling frequency, go up. Although you can listen down to 110 for, probably to 100 for voice. The DX calling frequency is 110. And below 100 is CW. There are also some people who will call CQ on 50.200. Some movement years ago to try to do that, make that the calling frequency for 6 meters. So every so often you'll hear some guys there on the call on that calling frequency during the contest. All right, the next thing is 2 meters, 144.200, plus or minus as much as you want, plus or minus 100. That's pretty much the advice I would give. Every so often you'll see someone running CW anywhere in there, as well as phone, and sometimes you'll see some guys below 144, 100 operating just CW, but you're welcome to operate as you see fit, as long as you follow the FCC rules about the use of CW only below 100. Let's see. T22, 100 plus or minus anything you can get your hands on. 432, 100 plus or minus anything you can get your hands on. CWs, SSD, whatever. Do not use FM in these frequencies. Use the, for FM, use 52.525. That's 52.525. 146.535 through 58, 15 kilohertz rasters. 146.535 to 58, 15 kilohertz rasters. So it's 535, 55, 565, and 58. 147 simplex frequencies as well, 147.51, 147.525, 147.54, sometimes 147.555, but that's tricky because it also is shared with the ARRL's code practice stuff, so you're not going to hear much there. It's not out of Connecticut. And what else? 223.5, 223.5, and 446.0. That's pretty much it. You can go all the, you can, this is an all band contest, so you're welcome to go anywhere in the VHF, UHF, microwave spectrum. Alright, any other questions or comments, confusions for anyone on the subject of the contest this weekend? 2 o'clock through 11 p.m. 2 o'clock on Saturday, 11 p.m. Sunday.
That's 2K.
That's 2K, go ahead, good evening.
Good evening. Have you talked about Rover at all?
Rover, Rover, go ahead.
Well, anyway. Oh, incidentally, there's a little bit of a grid square where the grid corner is map on the Barra website. We have a handy dandy grid corner, so if you're doing a Rover situation where you can operate the same station from multiple grid squares, there's a nice little map. Look on the Barra site, you can find it. And you can operate each station from, you know, different parts around the grid square on each of however many frequencies you can do as a mobile operator. And that can add up fairly quickly.
Yes, I call it the Tour de Rivervale. So if you cycle around Rivervale, you're in the four quadrants.
I did get approached by a police officer one time. I pulled into someone's private, how should I say, cul-de-sac. At least they thought it was private. I don't know. Looked like a public street to me. Anyway, someone was concerned that this person with antennas and anyway was hanging out after dark. Anyway, I ended up showing him not only my license but a set of rules for the contest, and the police officer was quite satisfied with that and went on his merry way.
Yeah, it would not be a bad thing to carry that wonderful state law with you too that talks about how you can operate while in motion, and it's not a cell phone, it's not a CB rig, etc. Probably a good idea to have that around if you're rolling down the river as we're doing this.
I would not suggest, however, trying to keep a log while you're doing this, and you really do need to keep a log, otherwise it gets very confusing, you'll never remember.
Yeah, I would think you're right. Absolutely correct, Amundo. Any questions about the Rover operation? Okay, there's a scoring difference. You can work the same station over and over and over as you enter a new grid. So, if I have two bands, I can make eight contacts with the same station. From the, you know, by basically two bands times four grids, away I go. So you might think about that. The other thing is, you multiply the grids times the total queues, basically on 2 meters and 220, 2 points for 220 and above.
comment.
Okay, comment.
K2BAR, K2DSL. In the January 2008 DHF contest, I did a rover, and I only have FM in my car, so I went and I did FM, and I made a few contacts in each one of those four grid squares with a bunch of club members, maybe three or four different club members total, and I don't know if I even got all four of them in all four of the grid squares. But just doing that, and I don't think anything else, I ended up coming first in the Rover Limited Northern New Jersey section. So if anyone goes out and does it, they have a, just hitting those four grid squares that Jim mentioned that are referenced on the VARA.org website, you can have a shot at coming in first in Northern New Jersey. K2BAR, K2DSL.
Well, one other thing about that, I would not make the assumption that just because you hear people on the air that you're going to be beaten and don't send it in. A, they could be in a different category than you, and B, they may not turn in their log. Okay, station. Okay, somebody with too much time on their hands needs a hobby. All right. Anyway, it's very, very good. What else? Any other comments about this topic?
K2BAR, KC2SGF.
KC2SGF. Go ahead, Rachel.
I just wanted to check in and let you know that I am listening.
Alrighty. Very, very good. Welcome aboard, Rachel. Alrighty. Any other comments about or questions, concerns about the contest? I think that is a rousing no. Alrighty, Richard, back to you in case you want to put some ribbons on it or add another aspect to this.
No, that seems to have covered it pretty good. Northeast, I'll remember what the operating mode is and everything. So I do appreciate everybody. This is KC2PYB.
Kind of like teeth. It's better to have your own uppers and prosthetic lowers if you have to have a choice between uppers and lowers. So remember, upper sideband. Does that help you, Richard?
Okay, I only got 11 teeth in my head, so what the heck?
Hey, it's 11 more than half the people in other states. We won't go there. All right, any other check-ins before we go to our announcement? This is K2BAR. Alrighty, then, NZ2K, how's your battery doing, Paul? K2BAR. He's not there. Okay. I believe his announcement was, he told me on 220 on the way home tonight, I'm assuming this is what he was going to announce. In February, there's going to be an auction. I don't know where and when. Well, let me say this. We have our auction on the first Sunday in March. The Barra auction is the first Sunday in March. It's at Westwood High School. I think it opens for sellers at noon and for buyers, etc., at 1. Auctioning will begin right thereafter. It will be the usual Fairlawn, you know, hot dog stand and such like that. And it will be a good time as well. Let's see, what else can I say? Let's see if Paul's back. Paul, do you know what? It was something about New Providence. I'm trying to remember what it was. They have an auction, but I'm trying to remember when.
getting this back fed by electronic means other than radio. All right, it's the 19th. It's a Friday night of February. There's an auction in New Providence for the New Providence Radio Club. So I think you can probably find that on the AWRL event site. All right, and we have ours on the first Sunday in February, in March. First Sunday in March, pardon me. And then there's the Crew 7373, scouting crew, Hamfest and breakfast, pancake breakfast on Saturday the 10th of April, which is the Saturday after Easter. So it's pretty easily remembered. And I can actually say it's Saturday after Easter because I think Orthodox and Eastern Rite Easter is the same as the Roman Rite and the Protestant Easter. So I think everybody's celebrating Easter the same this year. Alrighty. Any other questions about Hamfest and such? Okay, Don, how was the test session last week? I'm kind of curious how that worked out for you. One of my dads who's taken a test before is looking to take a test soon. He could take it last week because he was in Annapolis with us. But he's been studying, and he's really excited. His son got licensed, so it really kind of motivated him to study a bit. So what's the scoop on last week?
K2BAR on the net, W2JEK. Okay, well, the next test session will be February 19th. It's the third Friday of February at 7 p.m. at the high school. The past test session was on the 15th, and we had three applicants. We had two technicians come in and upgraded to general, and we had a young lady came down from Pine Island, New York, which is up near Warwick, and she took and passed the tech test. And that was the test. That was the test session. And because of the holiday Monday, I didn't get to mail it until Tuesday. So it should probably be up there by tomorrow, I would think, depending on the mail and how fast the people at the VEC get at the paperwork. So that's the story on that. So everything worked good, and no problems at all. Without that, goodnight. W2JK.
All righty, that sounds really cool. Oh, good. I'm glad we got that squared away. Any issue? Any comments from anybody about the NAQP last weekend? Actually, that was a nice little contest. I worked a couple of people from the Naval Academy. We had radio merit badge for 200, and no, this is not Jeopardy. Or it felt like it. We had two sessions of radio merit badge, half a day each, about 100 kids in each one. One a little bit more, one a little bit less, but totaled out at a little over 200. And it was really, really neat. And midshipmen did the table instruction and NTBSA from the NJDXA, and I did the most of the, should we say, topical introductions, et cetera, et cetera. And the radio demos were a little bit of everything. It was kind of neat. So that was kind of how I spent my weekend last weekend. I got a little NAQP time in there as well, although never enough. So, what? Any comments about that from anybody? Is anyone working in AQP? This is KQBAR.
Dennis Duque.
Yeah, Jim.
Not about so much the contest, but my question is, did you run across any extremely tall midshipmen?
Yeah, I got to tell you, there are a lot of extremely tall midshipmen, as well as guys who are, you know, who are Jeremy's height. I swear to God, it seems to run the gamut. You're inquiring about your nephew, I guess.
Yes, good, fine. You've got the message. Very good.
Yeah, I did not run into your nephew.
That would be really quite amusing, actually.
Yeah, well, I met two or three. I mean, I'm a big guy, but I met two or three guys that made me look like, you know, a little kid compared to them. I mean, they were just massive. I mean, they weren't just tall. They weren't just bean poles. I mean, they were like, you know, like, there was one guy in particular. He was so big. He reminded me of three large telephone poles strapped together side by side.
Yeah, cross between a basketball and a football, you know, linebacker or something.
Almost hoped he could run like a gazelle and could play rugby.
Yeah, I understand that Mark not only is extremely tall, he's also quite graceful, so he can play very well.
Yeah, I don't know if people realize it, but at the Service Academy, 5 days a week, if you're not on a varsity sport, you play intramural or club sports, and if you're intramural, your minimum recreation time per day is 2 hours. If you're in a club, it could be more, including O-Dark 30 and noontime workouts. If you're on a varsity, it can even be more. That's on top of your academic load. And even if you're like a history major or whatever, you're taking engineering courses in all these academies because that's part of the game. So you graduate a history degree, and you know your history degree, but you've got more science and engineering credits, and you want to know about math, science, and engineering credits you ever want to know. Anyway, it really is kind of fascinating. Alrighty, enough of that for now. Anybody else have questions, comments, confusions?
K2DSL.
David, go.
K2BAR, K2DSL. I'm pretty sure Don definitely worked the CW contest. I'm not sure about the phone contest, but I don't know what it was, January 10th, 9th, that weekend. I worked the CW contest. I ended up with 366 contacts. And then last weekend for the sideband contest, I couldn't work as much, but I ended up with 327 last weekend in the phone contest. And I know that Phil, WA2LXC, was up in the 200s there as well. I don't know if Don worked the phone contest. So. K2BAR, K2DSL.
Wow, that's pretty good. Is there a club category for this thing?
Yeah, I guess. I guess the NAQP isn't the ARRL, it's the NCJ, National Contest Journal. I'm not sure if there's a club, anything, but mine... Well, most of us, I think, whoever submit the Cabrillos always put Bergen ARA as a club anyway, so if there is, it'll just work it all in back to net.
2JEK.
Hey, Don.
No, I checked that out. They have a team category, and the teams have to pre-register before the beginning of the contest. There's no club category such as the ARRL or the CQ Magazine contest have. I was in the CW contest with 123 contacts using QRP, and I got on late in the afternoon, around 4:30 in the afternoon on Saturday, for the sideband contest. So I only made a few contacts on 20 meters, nothing on 15 by that time. It was dead. I made about three contacts later on 40 meters, and then had a bunch on 75 meters, and just to pull the multiplier in, I made one contact on 160 meter sideband. This was all using QRP. Wound up with a total of 37 contacts. Back to net, W2JK.
Isn't that exciting? Okay, very good. That's really, really productive. Well, we'll get some contacts in on 62 meters this weekend, I'm sure. But I got a very busy weekend, so we'll see. Alrighty, anybody else?
Mr. J.E.K. with a comment.
Don?
Related to the 6 meters, especially, and also 2 meters, there are people out there that they won't hear you too well, but if they use CW, maybe they will hear you. I know there's a number of times that somebody will hear me. I switch to CW, they'll copy me. Likewise, I remember one contest, there was a big pileup on 6 meters. They had E-Skip in. There was some guy out in the Midwest, and there was a monstrous pileup. Went down to the CW band. I figured, well, I'm not going to get to the pileup. I was turning around, went down to the CW band. Worked the guy, didn't know where he was. Turned out he was in the same grid as the guy with the big pileup, but he was on CW. So I got him right away. It pays to use the CW. There are people out there that may only be on the CW, or maybe your advantage to use a CW or have them use CW. If you can hear that, you can't hear them too well, have them switch to CW. So, it's a mode that's good, and it's in most radios have it. So it's a thought to keep in mind. That back to net, W2JK.
Okie doke. Very good to point out. I'm glad you did. Alrighty. Let's see. What I was going to ask you now. Alright. The other day, 6 meters was open. I worked somebody yesterday on 6, late afternoon on Saturday, what was the time? Was it, about four o'clock in the afternoon, I worked somebody in Central Tennessee, and we chatted for 20 minutes. And the band didn't fade out. He was still rocking and rolling when I signed with him. I had to go, so it was pretty exciting. So keep that in mind as well. As you rock and roll through this thing, there are amazing amounts of opportunities there. So do keep that in mind as well. Alrighty. Anybody else?
N2OEL,
go ahead.
Quick question. With a VGA monitor, I have a VGA monitor on a computer, and I would like to run 2 VGA monitors, so I went on eBay. Lo and behold, there's a double VGA adapter from a single, you just plug it into the back of your computer and run off 2 VGAs off the back of it. The question is, if somebody was able to look at that computer, could they tell if there was 2 different VGA monitors hooked up to it?
I'm not quite understanding. If who walks up to your computer, you have two monitors, you can see them.
No. Get the same situation at home that you do. With a work computer that's not supposed to have anything hooked to it. So if one was to hook, say, a large VGA monitor using the splitter, of course, the powers that be can look at my computer from a distance, 2,000 miles away, and allegedly see what's hooked up to it. And my question is, would they be able to see the fact that I have 2 monitors hooked through a splitter?
Comment. I understand now. Go ahead, David.
So, Noel, there's what are you trying to accomplish? Because typically you need a special video adapter if you want to drive 2 different monitors that see 2 different things, like double wide monitors where you can give yourself twice as much screen space. Though with a notebook, Windows XP kind of supports it out of that box. They can give you 2 windows with a notebook. But what's your goal in hooking up 2 monitors to the 1 desktop?
Well, I am only supposed to hook up company-supplied equipment to the company-supplied computer. The monitor that they give you is on a small size. I still happen to have a 26-inch LCD monitor. So I'm thinking I can turn the company computer down to very, very high dot pitch, you know, 1920 by 1186 or whatever the heck it is. Too small to see on the company-supplied screen. Easily visible on mine. And the advantage is, there's a lot of screens I go to, I'm busy there rolling up and down. Well, if I had more screen real estate, by making the dot pitch smaller, I could fit the whole thing and be faster. So that's what I'd like to do. And I have to be able to have it so I could shut off mine, because they have a simple expedient of checking to see what's hooked up. They ask you to turn on the camera and swing it around.
So then I got what you want to do. You want to be able to run the exact same thing across two different monitors. If that cable allows you to do that, then Windows doesn't need to know boo about it. And yes, then you can do it as long as the resolution you want to run works on both your monitors. Otherwise, you'll be hosed.
AC2SGF.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Is this an external amplifier for the VGA that you want to hook up? So you've got a cable that would be running from the computer into the amp, and then the amp would drive two monitors?
No, it's simply a splitter. It's one cable that would go into the back of the computer, and two cables come off of it, and each of them have a VGA connector on it, female. So it's one male on one end, two females on the other. It's a Y cable.
There may be an issue with the Y cable because of the draw of current. I've done that in the past, and there's definitely a potential that you could burn out the VGA card if the two monitors, the inputs to the monitors. Since the one is a LCD monitor, that's probably not going to be an issue at this point. The other point which David made is that they both have to be able to receive the same signal. Is the new monitor that you have a widescreen?
Both monitors have about the same proportions, except the one I bought is like twice as big.
You know, well, what you can do actually is if what Rachel is describing with the current, just turn the small monitor off and use the big one until they want to look at your computer.
Oh, that would work. And just leave it hooked up, because they can't really see the cables. I'm going to use cable bundling. And we'd have to ask Rachel. Rachel, would the monitor draw current from the VGA port of the computer if it was turned off?
No, it would not. However, the computer would recognize what type of monitor is attached to it. That's where you're going to be in such a tricky state, because you'd have to have the little monitor on when the computer turns on so it recognizes the external monitor, then turn on the big monitor so that everything's been established with the little one. That's because computers today have been set up to be able to identify the high def monitors versus the old standard VGA. That's why I was asking the question.
The time they check is in the middle of the night. So when they do uploads and they roam around your system at that time, they do not normally check in the middle of the day because you're working. They don't check in your work schedule because whatever they're doing puts too much strain on the bandwidth. They can't do it properly. So anything they would be doing would be in the middle of the night, but I didn't want to take a chance just in case, you know, I forget or something like that. So one of the things I do is I leave the computer must be left on at all times. I click the button on the monitor, but it's still connected at night.
Again, it's whatever monitor is attached when the computer boots up, that's the monitor that's recognized. If the monitor is powered off, then it's going to boot up and it's not going to have recognition of any external monitor. And at that point, it just goes into a default VGA mode.
Boot up once a month.
Again, many times there's a patch or there's a software update that comes down that requires a restart or a reboot. So it may not be a powered off restart, but it could very well be rebooted. Particularly with Microsoft and their security patches, every security patch does require a reboot, and that happens at least at UPS once a week.
You do realize my computer is not officially connected to the internet. It's a VPN, and the only connection I have is to the head honchos out in Las Vegas. In fact, my internet phone, when I dial my internet phone or do something with it, the path is 4,000 miles. They're sitting next to each other on my desk. There is no direct connection between them. If I want to talk to that phone and I control it with the computer, the path is from my computer to Las Vegas. It tells it somehow there through the mainframe or whatever they're running, and that controls my phone. So it's kind of weird.
Acknowledged, but my laptop is VPN as well, and I'll push the patches or whatever down whichever way I'm connected. If I'm in the office, it's connected through the wire at my desk. If I'm in a conference room, it's wireless. If I'm at home, it's through the VPN. And if I am on a support call at 2 o'clock in the morning and they decide that that's when the patch is coming down, I'm going to get hit with that patch. And it does reboot my computer. If it's during normal business hours, they have a time delay on there where it'll reboot 8 hours subsequent to the download. So I'm just giving you a warning that the computer recognizes what's attached when it boots up. And if they do a reboot, it's going to recognize what's attached when it boots up. And if you have it shut off, then you would have no problem.
Thank you. Back to net. K2BAR, this is NCOEL.
All righty. Well, very good. That was useful. Anybody have any follow-on questions on the topic?
Minister Kay.
Go ahead, Jim.
If you had a, or perhaps somebody knows, you have a VGA DA in line, are they set up so that the monitor ID thing comes from, say, one of the monitors and not the other, or does it completely block the monitor ID signal?
I don't know. Rachel, do you know?
It says a pseudo monitor and responds with regard to the controls and likes of the bank or the individual that's connected to it.
Jim, what did you say is in the middle?
Oh, if you were to use a VGA DA to do a split, obviously you couldn't do the ID from both monitors. I'm wondering if they connect the ID from, say, one of them and not the other, you know, the ID lead, or if they just block the whole thing.
David, the DA is a digital amplifier. That's why I was asking if Noel is hooking a DA up or a digital amplifier for the VGA output. And Yes, the ID is blocked from the two physical monitors. It's giving a DA imprint of what the DA can handle. So that's how it's recognized by the computer.
So it does change the ident as far as what Windows will recognize. So, yeah, okay, that's not... It would not make his employer happy.
No, but there's a rather complex but effective process for him to request a larger monitor if his handicap so requires it.
It won't work. After the LASIK and the laser surgery and the lens implants, I'm 20/25 in one eye, 20/30 in the other, and I wear special computer glasses that allows me to look at the computer screen all day without eye strain. But my whole purpose is we are rated on how fast we can do certain tasks. By using a larger monitor, I wouldn't have to scroll up and down, and I could pick up a few seconds several times in the course of one call. It would start adding up, probably chop 5% off my time and giving me an advantage.
I see. Okay. So for good reason, you don't want to do that. You don't want to mess with them. You want to make sure that they're happy with you at all times.
I already did the handicap thing with the mouse. You're supposed to use their mouse. I had to go get a doctor's letter to allow me to use a super trackball.
So you're familiar with the process and you could conceivably do it.
Yeah, but my eye doctor says my vision's so good, he didn't think it would be ethical. N2OEL.
You could just point out that it would be less strained if it was bigger. You know, strain is psychological as much as physical. It was just a thought. Okay, I have a question for the net. My question for the net is, if I have a computer that has a half gig or 512 meg DDR333 memory, and I want to replace it with a 1 gig stick, which I can do, it's okay, but it's a DDR2 stick, is that going to work in a DDR333 slot?
Go to crucial.com, put in your computer, it'll tell you all the things that you can put in there.
They did that at Micro Center. I'm holding the Crucial product in my hand, but I'm not convinced before I slice open the package that this is the right thing.
KC2SGS.
Rachel.
I would suggest you take the memory out of your computer and align it with the memory that you have in the blister packet, because there is a slot in the memory, and DD2 and DD3 have a different width slot and or different location slot, depending upon the speed of the memory as well as the size of the memory. So they are not directly interchangeable. Again, you can confirm that by taking your memory that you physically have in the computer and laying it on top of the memory that's in the packet, provided you can see the fingers on the chip.
Yeah, I've been doing that, and boy, it looks like it is. So the answer is, it's a $25 maybe. Well, I'll go back to the Crucial site, because they did it at the store, and they did it real quick, but that's a good idea, David, and Rachel, I think your idea is even good as well. And when I look at them, I literally reached for it, as you said, to do that, and I said, all right, let's try that. But it really, you know, through the blister pack, it looks very, very compelling. So I think we may have a winner here, but I want to be sure for obvious reasons.
What's the speed on the DD2 memory? Isn't that slower than the DD3? That means your computer will be running slower.
No, DDR333 versus DDR2. DDR-333 versus DDR2. Follow?
Hey, Gordon, I'm reading something here. How valid it is, but it says if your computer supports DDR2 memory, you can only upgrade with DDR2. Same goes with DDR3 and the original DDR. So I'm not sure if they're interchangeable from what your computer previously was using. But I don't know how valid this is. What did Crucial say when you put in your computer?
Is that what you said, David? What did you say, Rachel? You doubled.
I said, go on to the Crucial site and look at the speed of the memory for the Crucial that you have. Look at the memory speed that is the physical memory of the chip. You want to make sure that the speed is equal or faster with what you're replacing, or you will end up with memory errors.
Yeah, I'm trying to see where that speed is noted on each of these two parts. That's going to be tricky. All right. What's the Crucial website? It's not crucial.com. It's Crucial something else, right?
Crucial.com.
There it is. That's really weird. First time I did it, didn't find it, but anyway. I will take your happy advice, both of you. Both are good pieces of advice. I'll try them, and we'll see. I already made one faux pas this evening. Someone told me that it was a SATA drive in the machine, and I think it's an IDE. It's a 2-inch IDE, but it's an IDE, so I'm a little cranky already if this piece of online information is wrong. So good news, I haven't opened up the case yet, so I can take the whole thing back and replace it for what I really need.
What's the brand of the computer?
Panasonic Toughbook, CF29. But the problem is there's two different CF29s. And they're not clear. There's CF29 DDR2 and then CF29 series. What the hell does that mean?
I don't know, but I'm looking up the 29 series now, and it says that the maximum memory is either 768 or 1024, and it used regular DDR memory. So if you have DDR2 memory in it, then you definitely have the DDR2 model.
No, I don't have DDR2. I bought DDR2, but I should have bought DDR, I think is what I'm hearing.
Yes. And how much memory can you put in yours?
Well, actually, I can put a 1 gig SIM in the expansion slot. So what they say here is actually not accurate. It's not even accurate per Panasonic. I had a 512 meg stick in the slot, and then there's another 512 soldered on my motherboard. So if I have a 1 gig, I'll have a gig and a half. Seems to me that I got stupid and I just thought DDR2 for my newer machine, and it's clearly not.
I don't have any notebook memory lying around the bench yet.
It says here something about this. DDR memory with support for DDR PC 2700 speeds. I don't know what that means. It says it's backwards compatible, but I think we're talking about apples and oranges here compared to what we were talking about before.
Yeah, DDR is DDR. The PC 2700 is the type of DDR where your speed or, you know, it's different. You could have PCR, yeah, DDR, PC, something else, 3300, whatever all the various numbers are. I hate hardware. Software is so much easier.
Okay, well, let's not bore everybody with this. I think we've kind of beaten this to death. Anybody else have any comments, questions, confusions tonight? Thank you very much, everybody, for checking in the TechNet tonight. It's been a rather diverse evening. I'll be on the 146.61 repeater in Washington, D.C. tomorrow, which I think has Echolink, and also 146.88 tomorrow during the day. So feel free to, if you can figure out, the Green Mountain Repeater Association. Those two, they're two repeaters. So if you want to go look that up, you can catch me during the day. Jeremy and I are going to be down there for the day tomorrow. So anyway, everybody have a good time and a good day. Anybody want to make any last comments before we secure? I'd like to thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater and encourage everybody to get their dues into Barra another week and a half, or a week, guess. Not, well, 2 weeks from now. We have a meeting in February. And the VHF contest this weekend, again, 2 o'clock Saturday to 11 p.m. Sunday. And there will be a gathering at Tony's house at various times. Check with Tony for time and details, k2ami@awrl.net. And I think Fairlawn's also doing something on Saturday, I think, but they're kind of like a curtailed operation as well, 2 to 9 or something. I think that's what they were saying. All right, everybody, have a great evening, and thanks again. This is KTBAR, or W2TTT, securing and listening and standing by. Godspeed.